You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Hello, everyone, and a big welcome to you all back to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. It's great to be here. I'm Tim Topham, your host for the show, and today we're doing something very special, and the title is Live from the NCKP Remixing the Music Lesson. We're not actually coming live. I have pre-recorded this, but what I'm doing is sharing with you my short 25-minute presentation that I'll be giving at the NCKP conference over in Chicago in the week that you are hearing this go live. So, I've used this opportunity to practice my presentation. So, this would normally have slides going along with it, but I think it's just as effective as an audio-only podcast. So, I do hope you enjoy it. The National Conference on Keyboard Pedagogy, the NCKP, is a conference that I've been attending since I first spoke there as a young newbie Aussie in 2015. My presentation was all about getting the most out of teaching pop music. I still remember vividly doing it and being absolutely terrified, my first overseas speaking gig ever. And I just love attending this conference. So many teachers, so passionate, and it's been amazing to see the evolution of the conference in regard to creative pedagogy over the last 8 years since I was there. The title of my presentation is Remixing the Music Lesson, How Integrated Music Teaching Can Help Connect with the TikTok Generation. And it's a shortened version of my 90-minute keynote that some of you may have heard me deliver at schools and online at the start of 2023. With only 25 minutes, I had to be super succinct. So it is short, sharp, and hopefully really enjoyable for you and really useful. I would love for you, as you listen to this, to see if you can take away just one idea that you can use with one of your students. Just do one thing. That's what I always have professed and recommend again for this episode. All right, let's go into my presentation, Remixing the Music Lesson. Here we go. Well, hello, everyone, and it's so good to be back in Chicago for the NCKP. It's been, 4 years since we were last all here together, and I'm just delighted to be able to be speaking with you today. In fact, it's 8 years since I spoke to some of you, and I wonder if anyone in the audience was actually at my presentation back in 2015. It was all about how to teach pop music in the music lesson. Put your hand up if you were there. I thought there'd be some of you. And it's just wonderful to see the evolution over the last few years of creativity in music lessons. And that's one thing that we're going to be talking about today. But I wanted to start with this image of Ishii, the student that I actually talked about back in 2015. And the reason I bring her up is she's a great example of the kinds of things that a lot of music lessons are missing these days. And what I mean by that is she came to me at age of about 11 after learning piano for 5 years with another teacher, and she was ready to quit. She'd had enough, and she was completely bored and over it. And the reason was that she'd had just a very, very mediocre education. She'd learned 3 pieces a year in order to do her exams. And the thing that I realized really quickly when she came to me was that she had no idea about a lot of simple musical concepts like keys, the key of a piece, the time signature, where the notes of a melody come from. There was just no depth to her understanding of music. Sure, she could read some music and play some notes, but that was about the limit of it. And what I came to realize over the years that I was teaching at schools is the more transfer students I took on, the more mock exams I did, Ishii wasn't an isolated incident. So many students couldn't answer simple questions about the music that they were playing. They were missing beats. They were playing sort of 3-4, but it was ending up being 4-4. They didn't understand that. They couldn't sort of change a style or apply it or explain it. Very poor sight reading. A lot of them were disinterested and not practicing, and that was where I was trying to turn them around. A lot of them didn't have much of an idea about any general knowledge or theory that had any connection or relevance to the music that they were learning. They were really lacking meaning in their music learning. And that really got me thinking about why. Why is this the case with so many students? And I think it's because of the very linear way that a lot of traditional or classical lessons have been taught over the last 20 or 30 years. And you may have experienced this yourself. You know, you walk in, hi, pleasantries. Okay, let's play some scales. Great. All right, now let's do piece one. Teacher corrects the mistakes. Okay, piece two, correct the mistakes. Piece three, correct the mistakes. And we'll see you next week. And that's kind of how the lesson flowed. And what this meant was that everything becomes pigeonholed and separated. Piece one is completely separate from piece two. There's no connection there. There's no connection to the sight reading the student has to do. The general knowledge is over in its own bucket or pigeonhole over there. Scales are completely unrelated activity there over there, disconnected. And if you zoom out again a bit further, particularly for students experiencing the exam-based system over here in Australia, the entire life cycle of their learning, if they're based on an exam curriculum, are just year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, and they're doing grade one, two, three, four, five. They get to grade eight and they can finish. Fantastic. They don't have to play anymore. I mean, it's just heartbreaking, isn't it, to think that getting to grade eight after 8 or 9 years of study is the goal because they can then stop learning. I mean, it just seems awful to me. And that's something that I really want to turn around. Now, in Australia, one of the other things that often happened in the more traditional lessons, and certainly the lessons I was brought up with, is that theory was a very separate activity. In fact, you would physically finish your piano lesson and then move to another area of the room and sit at a table and work at a book and do your theory. That was how connected it was to the music you were learning. So, we've also got this disconnect going on between theory and practice, which I think is contributing to this really surface level understanding of what students need to know about music. So, one of the things I've come to realize over time, over the last 8 years or so since I was last speaking and talking about being more creative in lessons, is that we currently have what we might call creativity version one, where the music content of the music lesson is central and important, and that's as it should be. And creativity are activities that we might do around that. So, as time permits, we'll go and play this creative game, or we'll do a bit of improv over here. Maybe we'll learn the blues. And they're kind of separate activities still. So, it's been amazing to see this evolution. Back when I spoke first at this conference, there was no creativity track. There was no creativity committee. That just didn't exist. Now, of course, we've got lots of podcasts about creativity. We've got blogs, we've got resources, we've got creativity tracks at conferences like this. But I still think that we can go a little bit further with creativity. And that's version two, we might call it, where creativity becomes the bridge between theory and practice by being integrated into lessons. And that's where we get crossovers. If you picture a Venn diagram, crossovers between piece one and piece three that they're learning, and piece one and three and the scales that they're learning, and piece two and the technology, and maybe a bit of blues and some general knowledge. And there's all these overlaps in the Venn diagram, which I call the integrations. It was interesting to read the big, thick book called Practical Piano Pedagogy by the late Dr. Martha Baker Jordan. It was written in 2003, and I managed to find this great quote in there. And she said in there, "All elements of music instruction must be consistently integrated so that students perceive all segments of music study as an integrated whole whose parts are all interrelated. Teaching a student to compose integrates and complements the skills needed to become a proficient reader in ways that many other parts of teaching cannot." What she's saying here, I think, is that just doing more reading isn't necessarily the most effective way to create better readers. Things like teaching them to compose and other creative activities can really integrate and complement the skills needed to get this happening. And that's what we're talking about today. I call it integrated music teaching, where we've evolved from just doing creativity as a fun activity to making it central to everything that we do. We make it contextual to the music that students are learning. And this is, I call it research informed. We're going to be hearing from Dr. Anita Collins shortly about the research behind this and why this does actually deepen students' understanding and build meaning. Now, I visualize the integrated music teaching model as a wheel with three pillars around the outside and then a three-step process for integration in the middle. So the three pillars are student-centered learning, question-centric teaching, and creative teaching. and we're going to cover those shortly. The three-step integration process is to analyze, to connect, and then to integrate. And I'm going to be demonstrating that with a piece of music a little bit later on. And we're also going to have a listen to me teaching a student a very, very short segment of a lesson. Okay, so I would want you to think about a simple question for your students. If you asked your students this question, would they be able to answer it? And the question is, where do the notes in this melody come from? As you point to piece of music that they're learning. Would they be able to answer that? Most students have really no idea that the notes in a melody come from the notes of the key that the piece is written in, and therefore the notes of the scales that they're learning. And so, if they don't know that, then they're not going to really understand what the point of learning scales are. So, here's a great example of the interconnection between melody, scales, and key. That if we don't actively tell our students about this, they're never actually really going to understand this. So, we need to make these connections for them. We need to help them understand that the notes of the melody are come from the notes of the scales that they're playing. And so, scales aren't necessarily just a technical workout to move the muscles and get the brain into gear. They can actually be an important part of the music learning process. But just finding and explaining these connections between, for example, melody and scales is only step one in the process. And I believe that we can be much more powerful if we then go to step two, which is to integrate that learning using creative activities. That's what we really need to do to make this new knowledge solidify for students. So, as I was coming up with this framework and putting my thoughts together, I reached out to Dr. Anita Collins, who is a pretty well-known teacher here in Australia, and perhaps you've seen her TED Talk. She's an award-winning educator, researcher, and writer in the field of brain development and music learning. She's internationally recognized for her unique work in translating the scientific research of neuroscientists and psychologists into a language that the everyday parent, teacher, and student can understand. And so, I started talking to her about this idea of creativity and the power of it to really integrate and solidify and cement knowledge for students. And she showed me this research where, and you look at this and go, wow, that's absolutely, how are we going to understand that? But this is the power of Dr. Collins, is she can simplify this so that we can understand it. And in this model, you'll see the word meaning up the top and emotion down the bottom. And these are two things that we're going to be coming back to, because activities that build emotion really help to create meaning for students. So, let's have a listen to just a couple of minutes of my conversation. I interviewed Dr. Collins for about an hour, and I've just picked 2 minutes to share with you today about why these creative activities can really deepen students' understanding.
Another way to look at it, it actually helps students to progress more quickly, because the memory, the moment you took to make that memory, which is highly emotive, which creates high levels of meaning, therefore creates high memory. So think of memory, emotion, and meaning as a triangle. That then means they can leap onto the next thing and onto the next thing and onto the next thing, because once we make a memory of something, we can then retrieve it. And the stronger the memory, the easily we can retrieve it. Mm. And then we can keep going. But the other thing to keep in mind is that every time we make that emotional connection, every time we set the reward network off in our students' brains, the enthusiasm they have for learning heightens, and it is like a really, really, really good drug. It goes, oh, I want to do that again. I want to learn more about that. They get a stronger connection to you as the teacher because you initiated and created that big bang reward feeling, and they're kind of leapfrogged a whole bunch of other learning, and they can jump forward. So it's that helping to help that student become that amazing student who bounces into your door and goes, what are we doing today? And that creative bit is almost like the unpredictable part of it. And unpredictable or novel, which is what the research calls it, novel things are the things we remember, the ones that are out of the ordinary. If you do every lesson as scale piece one, piece two theory, there's no novelty in there. And so actually, that's why students don't make any really good memories of that continual system. It's when you break the mold, they go, oh, something's different. What's happening here? Let's make a memory.
So we're going to explore actually how this looks in a lesson shortly, but I also came across a great quote from Susan Eldridge. She's a lecturer in music entrepreneurship here at Melbourne Conservatorium of Music, and she was talking about how teaching is evolving right now while we're teaching. And she said, we've come from a teaching model historically very teacher-led with teachers in control. Now we're moving to an understanding that good pedagogy isn't teacher-led. Instead, teachers are asking students questions and we have much less control, but that's actually what good teaching looks like. And if you remember back to the IMT framework diagram, there was those three key pillars around the outside. And the first one is the student-centered approach. And that's what we believe here at Top Music very, very strongly, is that having students need autonomy in their learning and the self-determination theory research all points to that. And releasing some control actually gives students more ownership in their learning. And she goes on to say, so what if we're in this funny phase of music education, of people moving much more to teaching inquiry-led learning, which takes the control away from the teacher being the expert? What's my purpose now if I'm not the holder of the knowledge? It's a really uncomfortable place to be, especially if you've got a teaching practice that's really been about you having all the answers. So the point of this is that we really have to start shuffling our thinking around about what our job is as a teacher. Is it to disseminate knowledge and correct mistakes, or is it to inspire and motivate? And so I look at this as being an opportunity for more inquiry-based learning. And that's where our second pillar, question-centric teaching, comes in, where we want to use that approach to question our students and draw information out of them and move along a path with them rather than just dictate knowledge to them. Because ultimately, they have every answer to every question in their pocket right now. We don't need to give them definitions. We need to inspire them. Hi, everyone. I wanted to take a moment to let you know about an amazing community of music teachers ready to welcome you over at Top Music Pro. Top Music Pro is the global hub for music teachers looking to connect, learn, grow, and be challenged in both their teaching and studio businesses. Community members save time by accessing hundreds of step-by-step lesson plans, creative teaching frameworks, business guides, online courses, and workshops. We offer training in topics as diverse as music technique, lead sheets, website building, intermediate repertoire, group teaching, and special needs teaching. We also save you money through our extensive discounts, including those with Music Notes, Sheet Music Plus, Music Room, Office Depot, Tonebase, and many more. And if you like sheet music, all our members get a free book of studio-licensed, beautifully engraved sheet music each and every month. As a valued podcast listener, you can check out the Top Music Pro community free for 14 days by heading to topmusicpro.com, clicking Join Now on our studio tier, and using the special coupon code IMTPOD23. That's all one word. So that's IMTPOD23. We can't wait to welcome you inside. If you haven't heard of inquiry-based learning before, a short definition of it is that inquiry-based learning transfers some responsibilities from teachers to students, and releasing authority engages students. Inquiry-based learning generates such excitement in students that neurons begin to fire, curiosity is triggered, and they can't wait to become experts in answering their own questions. It's a little bit like what Dr. Collins was saying towards the end of that clip earlier. And I found this quote as well that I thought really sums things up. Activating curiosity is far more important than information delivery, and this could not be truer for our TikTok-obsessed generation of students. We need to activate their curiosity in order to get the most out of their learning. So what is an integrated approach? Well, it's a research-informed teaching model that uses creative activities as the bridge between theory and practice. Novel creative activities help students build meaning and reinforce learning in a deeper way. And what can we expect if we did teach in this way? Well, it's a really non-linear teaching and curriculum. It's going to have unpredictable outcomes. It's less about dictating and prescribing and more about questioning. It does help students build deeper meaning. It's far more immersive, and it's kind of improvisationary teaching as well. There's a lot that isn't structured when we teach in a more integrated way because we have to take opportunities as they come up. Anita Collins calls this just-in-time learning. If you want to have a listen to my full interview with her, I shared it on the podcast just a week or so ago. What I thought we'd do is just have a quick listen in on a couple of minutes of a lesson that I had with one of our members' students. So this young man is called Finn, and he's a student of Mary Ashenden, who's one of our long-serving members over at Top Music Pro. And in this, I've drawn out a little element of one of the pieces that he's been learning. So this is very contextual. And we've taken a rhythmic idea, a rhythmic pattern, and we've started improvising on it. So let's have a listen now to this short clip of my lesson with Finn.
Let's make up our own pattern in the right hand. And let's go to a new key area. So, I don't know, you pick a key that you like. Major key.
F major.
F. Something about F today. So let's work out a little bit of a pattern in the right hand that we can repeat, and we'll try and do a bit of an out of sync thing. So we're going to completely change now what's on the page. So what can we do note wise in F? Do you want to explore just a few, just play around a few ideas?
So F major, we have. I think we want to end it on F like they've done it. So I don't think we should start on F.
Okay.
And we should probably use the flat. So maybe something like.
Ooh.
You could use the G. G's better.
I like it. It's really nice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but it's not expensive.
Really nice. Really nice. Okay. So what are we going to put? What we've actually Yeah. We're not in F anymore. We're in G minor, aren't we?
Yeah. Turn it to G or stick with F.
Oh, okay.
Is that?
You try it. What do you think? Just playing an F major chord in my left hand with it.
Oh, you're right. That would work. All right.
Come up an octave, Finn.
How do I do it?
So before we got into that part of the lesson, we actually did some transposing of the given pattern. So that pattern that he was playing was one that he created himself from scratch, but it was based on the same idea, this repeating right-hand motif with something changing in the left hand that was in the piece of music that he was learning. Unfortunately, we don't have time to go into it too much. But what did you pick up? Did you pick up anything, any part of what he did when I asked him questions, the questions that I asked him? Hopefully, it was instructive. One of the important things to pick up, I think, is because Mary's been such a fantastic teacher with Finn, what was the first thing he did when he knew he had to work in the key of F? He played the scale, didn't he? I didn't even ask him to do that. He knew that in order to create a melody in the key of F, he needs to know the scale and the notes of that scale. So, he's already made that connection. But for a lot of students, they would need help with that particular step. All right, so let's get on to the model and how you can use this in your own teaching. So, as I said earlier, there's three steps to the integration model. Firstly, we're going to analyze the music. So, we're going to find musical elements and mark up our score, literally print it out. And even if you've done this before, let's try it again. Think about what triggers your enthusiasm for that piece and why you like teaching it. And what might make students curious themselves? Is there a background about the composer? If it's Mozart, then you know, Mozart's a character, right? Nothing pure and beautiful about him, even though his music is like that. He was all about, you know, fart jokes and being silly. Is there something about the composer that you could talk about? What surprising fact has fascinated you about any of these elements that you're finding in the music? Ask yourself, did you know questions that you can ask the student? And so I've done this with the Bergmuller Ballade as an example, because there's lots to talk about there. The 3/8 time signature, the left-hand motif, the key changing from C minor to C, the tonic major, C major in the B section, lots to talk about. Okay, so you're going to be analyzing. Step two, you're going to make connections. And we're going to be making connections through three lenses. One, within the repertoire. So within that piece, let's take the Bergmuller piece, what connections can you make? I even just mentioned one before, the tonic major and minor of the two different sections, the repeating C minor chords turning into an arpeggio later on. Yep, up, 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 bum. What connections can you make within the repertoire? Make a list of them or highlight them or something. The other way that we can connect, part two, is to other repertoire the students learned or learning. And this is a really strong one because we can take things that they already know and that are being built upon in the new piece and connect them, make connections for the student. And then the third way we can connect is to the student's own lives. If you know their dances, can you make connections there? If they love motorsport, can you make connections about walking the track? I've got a blog post about that you can read about. If they are playing team sports, can you make some connection about the need to make sure we do some technical drills, slow down, play only parts of the piece rather than always playing from the start? I don't know. There's lots of ideas there. In fact, Catherine sent us a message in one of our groups saying that she, I feel that music is currently on a back burner in some way. How can we compete against horse riding or 10 dance classes a week? My compromise this year is teaching them repertoire about their other hobbies. So I have horse crazy kids doing horse songs. So far, they are practicing and love the colored horse title pages. So there's a teacher who's making those connections to the students' lives. And step three is to integrate. So ask yourself, what creative activities can you design to help solidify these connections? What novel learning experiences can you create that students will enjoy and remember? So if we just take that simple one that we had at the start, looking at the key. So if we analyze and we're looking at the key, we know it's in C minor. So one of the connections we can make for the student is between the scales and the melody. We've talked about that before. That's V1 or step one. But if we really want to deepen understanding and meaning, we want to integrate. We want to find a creative activity that can really get the student immersed in this learning experience. And so for that, we could improvise in the key in order for them to understand that the melody notes that they're improvising is just what the composer did to create the piece in the same kind of way. And that's it. That three-step process is something that I would encourage anyone to try with one student and one piece in the next week or two or whenever you go back to teaching after the summer break. Try it out and see how it goes and see what the student's response to it is. And remember what I said, this kind of teaching is very improvisationary. You're not going to have all the answers and you're not going to get it right. You might have some epic fails along the way, but that's okay. Students actually really enjoy knowing that their teachers trying their best, trying new things, and learning along the way as well. And just to finish, as one example, I read in one of our other forums, a teacher asking this question, which led directly to my thinking about this. She said, tips on teaching adults? I'm starting teaching a family friend who used to play piano, and he's my first adult student ever. The last piece he remembers learning years ago is Pachelbel's Canon in D, but I have no clue how much he's retained since then. So what's our step one in the process? Well, we're going to analyze the music. Now, we could skip all this and we could do the traditional thing and pull out the music because everyone has a copy of Canon in D, probably their favorite arrangement. And we could put that in front of the student or this adult student and go, all right, let's play some, let's see what you can remember how to play. But that's an older way of thinking about it. We can be much more integrated and creative about it. So we're going to analyze it. Let's look at that left-hand pattern. We've got that basso continuo repeated pattern. We've got the chords that can go over that, D, A, B minor, F sharp. It repeats over and over. So what connections can we make for that particular student? Well, for adult students, this is a great one because there are so many modern songs that use that same chord progression. I can think of Go West by the Pet Shop Boys. I can think of the Graduation song by Vitamin C. What else? Don't Look Back in Anger, there's a song by Coolio. So many connections that you could make for adult students that I'm sure they would know really, really well and they would find fascinating to learn more about. And then for your integration, that's where you let your creativity run wild. What can you do to explore this with your student? Well, thank you very much for having me here at the NCKP. I hope you've enjoyed today's presentation and I look forward to any quick questions that you've got. So So did you choose just one thing that you can try? If you'd like to try the integrated music teaching approach, then please just head over to topmusic.co/integrated, where you can download our one-page cheat sheet, reminder about that framework and our three key pillars. That's topmusic.co/integrated. Over on the Guitar Podcast this week, Michael's doing a solo episode, and it's called The Myth of 10,000 Hours. That's a really common sort of rule, in inverted commas, that's been talked about for many, many years about the 10,000 hours of practice required to be an expert in something. So, it sounds like Michael's going to be breaking this myth. I'll be really interested to hear it myself. That's over at topmusic.co/guitar060, or just search for the Top Music Guitar Podcast wherever you're listening to today's show. Can't wait to speak to you again next week when I'm back in the studio in Melbourne. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Hopefully, you know just a little bit more about what integrated music teaching actually means. Speak to you again soon. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.